Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Mark Thiessen's already in studio with Starbucks. So it turns out, I guess a morning show host doesn't like coffee. I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking. Brad Raffensperger will be on at the bottom of the hour. Georgia's Secretary of State. They got a lot of early voting. All those people who said Jim Crow 2.0. Let these people going to pass out waiting on long lines because they can't be served water. It turns out the turnout's greater than ever, and over 50% of the electorate that's expected to vote has already filed. So there that goes. What about an apology all around? Before we get to Mark, let's get to the big three.
Stories you need to know. It's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This air defense system destruction is really powerful because Iran is sitting there essentially naked. And they know full well that if they conduct another significant attack on Israel, their vulnerability is absolutely staggering.
It's true. They have no air defense. Iran promises to attack back at Israel for last week's attacks. The problem, they have no way of defending against the retaliation on that. It was bombed out. So was the radar used to guide the missiles into Israel. Is it all bluster? We'll discuss it.
Number two.
I'm not old. I'm seasoned. I have been through enough elections that I can tell you I have never seen a tighter election. Look, I'm not going to lie. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have been in the state a great deal. It is Michigan that delivered his presidency in 2016, and he's hoping for a repeat.
Debbie Dingell knows, especially her husband's been there forever prior to that, talking about what's going on in Michigan. State of the race. We look at the leading experts, the pollsters, the breakdown of what's likely to happen on Tuesday, plus what the early vote indicates.
Number one.
Donald Trump, you never see him around strong, intelligent women, ever. It's just that simple. They're intimidating to him. He doesn't like to be challenged by them.
Mark, you were doing a good job. Great headlines, doing a great, as a great surrogate, but you just blew it when surrogates attack. That should be the headline leading the Kamala camp this week as Biden, Clinton, and now Cuban all go rogue and keep Harris in the explain first mode. Mark. You know, Cuban really understands the economy so much better than anybody on the Harris staff. And I think he was coming up with the Cuban economy in some of his explanations.
Yeah.
But now coming out, saying something like that, you know, he wasn't stressed. He wasn't taking a hard question and misanswered. He told The View that. And that could not be further from the truth. Is that a big deal?
And Alyssa Sarah sitting, Farah is sitting there just with like a lump on a log when she was one of the strong, former Trump communications director. You know, so good Lord. I mean, look, the surrogates are not serving Harris very well. You got first, you know, Trump was in this crisis because of some stupid comedian who made a really, really tasteless racist joke at his rally, and the media was running with that. And then Biden comes around and calls Trump supporters garbage, and all of a sudden he's in a garbage truck and a sanitation worker outfit, and he's taken something that was negative and turned it into a positive for himself. And then now you got Mark Cuban going out. I mean, look, Donald Trump surrounded himself with strong women. I you know, the obvious ones are already been discussed, from Kayleigh McEnany to Kellyanne Conway to all the rest of Betsy DeVos. But you know what? But you know who else he not getting much attention? Gina Haspel is the head of the CIA, the first woman to lead the CIA. And he not only put the first woman to lead the CIA, he put the first woman in charge of the clandestine division, the division that runs all the CIA operations, all the covert operatives around the world was being run by a woman for the first time on his watch. He empowered. So they called themselves the CIA. They said under Trump, CIA was run by a band of sisters, you know, and so just. It's such a ridiculous attack.
By the way, I've heard that explained 20 times. We just did it for 3 hours. You just brought it to a place that was – I forgot about Gina Haspel.
Yeah, that's exactly. Great.
So Mark Cuban came out and said, let me clarify something. This is what I said during the conversation about why Nikki Haley was not active in the campaign. I know many strong, intelligent women voting for Trump, including my extended family. I know he has worked with strong, intelligent women, including Elaine Chao, Kellyanne Conway, Ivanka, and many others. I stand by my opinion that he does not like to be challenged publicly. I don't know what you – I mean, that's such a ridiculous answer. I mean, if you have an ally on your hand, chief of staff, I like to challenge the president publicly.
Yeah, this is what the left does all the time is that they – first of all, he's not the left, I guess. But the Trump's critics do is they take something – that he says or does, and they turn it into something, you know, something far worse that's so obviously wrong that they step into it. You know, I think that Nikki Haley should be out on the campaign trail with him every day between now and Election Day, because there are millions of swing voters out there who like Trump's policies but don't like him. And he needs somebody out there to go out there and say, look, I understand how you feel. I feel the same way as you do, but I'm voting for him because this is why, and making that case. But so, you know, he's taking something that his hesitance to use Nikki Haley and then turns it into something that it completely isn't.
Right. So Kristi Noem, Sarah Sanders, Tulsi Gabbard, Danica Patrick, Sage Steele, Caroline Leavitt are all going this weekend into Georgia and Atlanta. They're going to go on a women's tour.
Yep.
And Larry
there you
Trump.
Go.
So there you go. So the state of the race right now, as you see it.
So everything tells me that Trump is winning. He the body English of the two campaigns, one is flailing, the other one is campaigning with joy. Remember when Kamala Harris was going to campaign with joy? Well, I see, you know, Donald Trump making French fries, riding in a garbage truck, wearing an orange vest, and saying it makes him look slim. He's joking. He's funny. He's having a good time. All the body English says that Trump is winning. I'm worried. I get 2022 vibes right now. Everyone was expecting a big red wave in 2022, and then it didn't materialize.
Well, that was abortion.
No, it was not abortion. It was the fact that we put forward a bunch of candidates that the American people didn't like as an alternative. And by the way, so if you look at right now,
I think it was abortion.
Well, we'll disagree.
You don't?
No, I don't think it was abortion.
You don't think it mobilized women to come out of the woodwork?
I think that in tight races where we had a really bad candidate, and it would, if we had strong candidates, it wouldn't have made a difference. If we had Doug Ducey running in Arizona and we had Sununu running in New Hampshire for Senate, they would have won, and abortion wouldn't have stopped them. We picked bad candidates in 2022, which is why we lost. But here's what I'm worried about.
Well, in those two cases, you're
so,
right.
So, here,
but Dr. Oz,
but then we would have won the Senate.
No, but Dr. Oz was a good candidate. You don't think so?
No, I don't think he was very good at all.
You think McCormick's better?
Well, now we're going to find out, aren't we? I mean, you know, they didn't go back to Dr. Oz to run again. They went with McCormick, which is the guy that we should have run with the first time. Look, the polling shows right now that all the swing states are within the margin of error, and there are a quarter of swing state voters say that they're undecided, they're uncommitted. And when you look at them, I did a deep dive in my Washington Post column this week on who those people are. They're conservatives. 66% are either moderate or conservative. 74% disapprove of Biden, which is more than the population in general. 68% disapprove of Harris. 79% say the economy is doing poorly and getting worse. 52% say Trump would do a better job on the economy, but they're not committing to vote for Trump. So two things can happen. Those people in the end either break heavily for Trump and he wins in a landslide, or they don't vote. And half of them say they're thinking about not voting. They don't vote. They stay out. They're probably not going to vote for Harris because they don't like her. But they're not. If they don't vote for Trump, that could give Harris the margin to win. And so, if you know this information, what should you be doing? You should be focusing and targeting those voters and making a case to them why I understand why you don't like me. I'd understand the things that I do. Sometimes I say things that rub you the wrong way, but you like my policies. You like the results. You like the way the country was running when I was president. And you don't have to like the fireman when your house is on fire. You don't have to think the fireman's a great guy. You right. just need somebody who knows how to put out a fire and our country's on fire.
And you think he should say that? Not
I think
Sarah
he
does.
Should be saying that. I think he should be deploying Nikki Haley to go out and say that because she is that 26%. She's got all the same concerns about Trump that they do. And by the way, when you look at the polling, this is why I push back on you on the abortion thing. Why are they hesitating about Trump? The polling shows only 3% are concerned about abortion. Only 3% are concerned about the criminal charges against him. Only 7% say they're concerned about threats to democracy. 44% say it's character and temperament. It's Trump's character and temperament that's causing them to hesitate. So they agree with him. They dislike Harris, but they don't like him. And so you've got to give them a permission structure to vote in their self-interest.
And somehow you got to get in front of him in a place they'll show and listen.
Exactly.
So that's going to be the challenge, too. How do you get them to listen? So President Trump, one of his stops yesterday, sat down with Tucker.
Yeah.
And Tucker was doing his own stop. So he sits down and interviews President Trump, and they talk about Liz Cheney. But they both have disdain for Liz Cheney, and they look at her as a war hawk. And this is what's getting some traction on Drudge, Cut 13.
She's a radical war hawk. Let's put her with a rifle standing there with 9 barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face.
So you know exactly what he was saying.
Yeah.
He was saying that it's easy to be a war hawk while you sit in Washington and you send people to die. He's cognizant of these are kids with these are young men and women with families. So they're going to town on this.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is going to assassinate Liz Cheney. Your reaction.
Yeah. So, first of all, I wish he wasn't sitting down with Tucker, who just had a Holocaust denier on his podcast. I mean, I love Donald Trump. I have great affection for Donald Trump. I don't have great affection for some of the people he surrounds himself with. And Tucker's at the top of that list. But here's the thing. He was making a point that I deeply disagree with, which is this idea that, oh, yeah, you know, warmongers want to send your kids to war, but they won't go fight themselves. I think that's not a smart argument. But he wasn't saying he's going to put her in front of a firing squad. This is what the left always does. Trump says something that I think he shouldn't say, that some people will find offensive. And instead of just going with what he said, they try to turn it into something he didn't say, and they lie about him. And he can turn around and say, that's not what I said. They're lying about me. I don't buy into that argument. And first of all, nobody's talking about sending our kids to fight anywhere anymore in Ukraine. There's no Americans fighting in Ukraine. We're talking about helping allies fight. We're talking about the Reagan doctrine right now, which is helping people, freedom fighters around the world who are our allies, fight our enemies for us without any American troops going in to do it. They just need our help, our intelligence, and our support. So that's not what she's talking about. But also, Liz Cheney, you know, I really am disappointed in Liz Cheney endorsing Kamala Harris, and not just endorsing Kamala Harris, actually campaigning against Ted Cruz. So if you're a never Trump conservative who doesn't want to vote for Trump because you don't like him, I get that. I respect that. I disagree with it. But to support Kamala Harris, who she said was a communist a few years ago, if you're supporting Kamala, at least if you're a conservative, you certainly want a Republican Senate to be a check on her, because if she gets a Democratic Senate, then, you know, Katie bar the door, they're going to pass everything by 50, get rid of the filibuster and pass everything by 50 votes. How can you be campaigning against Republicans in the Senate? She's not a conservative.
It's almost like
she's not a conservative.
It's almost like sometimes when you lose your temper and you're in a rage and you say, wow, I went too far.
Yeah.
She's had a 3-year rage.
Yeah.
And as she finds herself knocked out of a primary, knocked out of a job, knocked out of a career, and she's desperate to try to hurt him, it was a bad tactic for her to tour around with her, because she doesn't have a big constituency.
Well, if she did, then she would have run for president and challenged Trump, and she didn't do it.
But there's two things. When we come back, the other controversy, which is also – by the way, that's taken out of context. It's inaccurate. Trump does make mistakes. Maybe he shouldn't have brought that up, but you know exactly what he meant. Everyone knows what Trump meant. I'm not a war hawk. I'm not going to get into war. And Ambassador Bolton and Liz Cheney would. So that's his point. But the example is taken in a nugget, and people are out to run with it. When we come back, what he said about women, which I don't have a problem with, but if you only take half his answer, it's been totally mischaracterized. Mark Thiessen here for a few more minutes. Oh, by the way, check out his column in the Washington Post right now. You'll have some context and might be the winning formula for President Trump.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
My people told me about 4 weeks ago, I was saying, no, I want to protect the people. I want to protect the women of our country. I want to protect the women. Sir, please don't say that. Why? They said, we think it's very inappropriate for you to say. I said, why? I'm president. I want to protect the women of our country. They said, sir, I just think it's inappropriate for you to say. Pay these guys a lot of money. Can you believe it? I said, well, I'm going to do it whether the women like it or not. I'm going to protect them. I'm going to protect them from migrants coming in. I'm going to protect them from foreign countries that want to hit us with missiles and lots of other things.
So that is perfectly in context. I listened to it and I don't think it's a big deal. They took out, I'm going to be a protector of women whether they like it or not. And that's what they are running with on the left, is Donald Trump wants to take your rights away, Mark Thiessen.
How are you taking someone's rights away by protecting them from crime?
If you only give half the soundbite?
Even the cut down soundbite doesn't make any sense. And basically what he's doing in a typically Trumpian way is saying something good, which is, I'm going to be your president whether you vote for me or not. Even if you don't vote for me, I'm going to protect you. Even if you don't, you know, support me, I'm going to make sure that we don't get into foreign wars. Even if you don't support me, I'm going to take care of the border and make sure our cities are safe. You know, I'm going to serve you as your president and fight for you whether you vote for me or not. That is a great thing for a president to be saying. He said it in a way that probably, you know, he'd probably say it differently if he had thought about it, but, you know, this is again, they always take stuff out of context and then they lose all their credibility because then no one believes them
right.
when they say stuff. This is what the left does. They always go a step too far.
Well, yeah, let's just see, because it's such a small faction of our country that hasn't decided yet. So I just look at these surrogates.
26%.
How expensive? Yeah.
1 in 4.
How expensive is a surrogate meeting, Zoom call? I mean, if you're the Harris campaign, can you get Clinton on with the Obamas, on with Mark Cuban, and say, this is our theme today? Because, yeah, Bill Clinton, again, said, well, if the border was better protected, this girl would be alive, Rachel Maureen would be alive. And then he's saying to a group of voters, vote for Trump, vote for Harris, even though the economy for Trump was better. Listen, cut 17.
You did pretty well when I was president, and I think I'm entitled to my opinion about who'd be better. Two, I don't think it's right to say that people have to vote for Donald Trump because the economy was better there. I don't believe that.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Vote Harris, I guess.
Vote for Harris, even though she doesn't vet the migrants, and she has a worse economy than Trump. It's a hell of an endorsement, I'll tell you. I mean, I think, quite frankly, Trump should take him and put him on the stumps out in the swing states, because he's the best surrogate for Trump I've ever seen.
The big question is, when Biden makes his comments about being garbage, Trump voters are garbage support. And then when you see Bill Clinton twice do stuff like this, and Barack Obama berating people into saying, if you know, black men don't, you know, you owe it to women, don't just not vote. Do you think on some level they don't want her to win?
It's a hell of a theory. It's probably subconsciously, maybe. I'm not sure if it's intentional, if it's that, or whether it's just sort of subconsciously they're undermining her. But I mean, it's just Bill Clinton if you think about this, the Democratic Party of Bill Clinton no longer exists. The Democratic Party of Bill Clinton was abortion was safe, legal, and rare. The big era of big government is over.
Budget
is balanced, and the border is secure, and we're against illegal immigration. That Democratic Party doesn't exist. That's essentially the Trump platform today.
Right.
And so he's got to look at this party and say, what the hell is going on?
If you want to run against a Bill Clinton Democrat, the Democrats have to lose this time. They have to remake their party. It's got to be what Josh Shapiro, I haven't studied him, but he says he is.
Yeah.
Center left.
We'll see.
All right. What are you going to be on next?
I'm going on Varney in a few minutes.
Stuart Varney's got an accent.
He does. I heard that.
Anyway. Do the show anyway. Mark, thanks so much. We'll see you. I can't wait for your insight and the coverage.
I'll be here
next week.
See
what happens.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back, everybody. Just some jobs numbers that came across 45 minutes ago, and it's ugly. They expected over 100,000 jobs. They added 12,000. 12,000 jobs. Manufacturing decreased 46,000, reflecting a decline of 44,000 in transportation equipment. The last time the economy created fewer than 12,000 jobs was December of 2020. Private payrolls lost 28,000 jobs, while the government sector created 40,000 jobs. See, that's just it. A lot of these job numbers has the government growing bigger, the obligations getting greater. It's kind of backwards. The economy added back all the jobs paused in the pandemic and created 6.7 million jobs overall. comparing employment levels to February 2020. So we're back on the same ground we were before the China virus. Brad Raffensperger joins us now, the Georgia Secretary of State. Brad, welcome back.
Good morning, Brian. Glad to be back.
Well, first off, don't you feel as though the Al Sharptons of the world, President Bidens of the world, owe you and Brian Kemp and others an apology for labeling the Georgia election reform Jim Crow 2.0, making horrible statements about saying your quest was to lock out minorities? Doesn't that, don't you feel as though there should be an admission?
Well, and also make sure you mention Stacey Abrams. She was on CNN this morning and talking about voter suppression and long lines. Well, we don't have any long lines. We actually right now have 3.7 million people that have already voted, 200,000 of those with absentee voting, and 3.5 million people have voted in person early. No lines. Very, it's just moving so quickly. I don't know what she's talking about. I think she's out. She just won't get off her high horse. She's actually the founder of the election disinformation movement, and she needs to realize she's looking silly because it's not happening in Georgia. Record turnout, short lines, and those who want to vote are voting.
Well, you remember, and she doesn't bring it up now because Democrats want to focus on January 6th, which no one defends, and because she was the one who said, I'm really the governor, I'm the rightful governor of Georgia. It was stolen from me.
Right. In 2018, she began this whole election denial movement when she said she lost because the machines flipped the votes. They didn't flip the votes. And then she talked about voter suppression. And that was one of the highest turnouts we ever had. And now, since then, in 2020, we had higher turnout. 2022, we had each year we've been having higher and higher turnout, which shows you that the Election Integrity Act of 2021 did not decrease turnout. Actually, what it did, it helped shore up people's confidence in the process. We now have photo ID for all forms of voting. Only one of five states that has photo ID for absentee voting. We think that's really good. Texas and us have that, along with Nebraska, Kansas, and Minnesota. We think that's just a great process to give people confidence in the absentee ballot process. We also have in there that lines have to be shorter than 1 hour on Tuesday, on election day. And then with our electronic poll pads, we are checking people in so quick, and under a minute. Trisha and I got, you know, our voting card in about 47 to 50 seconds. Just amazing how people are moving through there. So lots of people are voting, no lines.
So put in context, if you would, Brad. So you said we had 3.5 million voted in person. In the absentee ballots, it's 3.7. How many you expect to show up in the state are you projecting?
Well, that's 200,000 absentee. Right now we have 3.7. Let's say we get another 200,000 today. We'll have 3.9 million before we even hit Election Day. Then we'll have north of 1 million show up. We'll be over our 5 million number without a doubt, because people are engaged, people are angry. We've had a lot of things happen in Georgia, not being political, I'm making sure we have fair, honest, and accurate elections. But Lake and Riley's murder, that has really inflamed people about this out-of-control immigration. Inflation is hurting everyone. That hurts people, anyone that's making $100,000, that hurts left and right, and they're upset, and so they're looking for solutions for that. So I think those are really the big issues, the pocketbook issues and out-of-control immigration.
Do you know what today is? I'm sure I don't have to tell you that her killer, her alleged killer, Jose Ibarra, charged with murder of Lake and Riley. The hearing today will focus on the DNA evidence. Specifically, the defense is arguing the DNA evidence is unreliable in the case. But, I mean, the evidence is overwhelming. This guy did it. And he started in New York, crossed illegal. He has a brother also, nothing but trouble. Didn't belong here to begin with. And then preys on Lake and Riley and kills her and destroys the lives of the family and gives people a general sense that maybe they're not safe on campus. It's just horrific all around. That really matters to the people of Georgia.
Well, I think it matters to the entire country, but particularly when it happens so close. Plus, at our flagship organization, University of Georgia, it was just a major hit to the gut, and people are still reeling from it.
So it looks like Brian Kemp, from what you observed, and Donald Trump have kind of healed the rift between them. How would you characterize? Have you guys spoken since the whole fallout from the last election? You and Trump, and
I just do my job, and he knows I'm just doing my job, and that's that. I think that's going to be good enough for everyone. But at the end of the day, obviously, we're just really grateful from our standpoint. We have Governor Kemp, in charge here, and he really came alongside of us with his Georgia Emergency Management Agency to make sure every single precinct was ready to go. So all the counties after Hurricane Helene came through here, we got a lot of support from the governor's office. Counties worked hard. And in spite of, you know, hurricane a month ago, we're having record turnout. And at the end of the day, I think everyone can trust the results because we have photo ID for all forms of voting. We have checked our citizenship, you know, the rolls, our voter rolls for citizenship. And we found about 2 years ago that we had 1,600 people who attempted to register, did not get in because our system caught them. Just finished up the second one a few months ago. And we found 20 people that were non-citizens. And they got immediately off the voter rolls, but also that's a felony. And we sent that information to local prosecuting attorneys. They will be prosecuted. That is a serious felony in Georgia. So we're making sure that only American citizens are voting, which is real important for every American citizen that's voting this year. They want to make sure that only Americans are voting. And so we think we've got really, you know, high marks. And all this early voting, all this, you see, all those results have to be reported, Brian, no later than 8 p.m. on election night. That's going to be 65 to 70% of all the ballots. All this early accepted absentee ballots, the 200, 300,000, that'll have to be reported. So you're looking at 70 to 75% of all the ballots reported no later than 8 p.m. on election night. And also, anyone in America, they can go to what we have is called the Data Hub. Just go to sos.ga.gov and put it in Google Data Hub. It shows you how many people have voted, what counties are voting, and then what percentage of R's and D's and all those other kind of demographics that you want to look at. Tons of data on there, very transparent, and people are really loving it. In fact, Bill Hemmer, I think he told me yesterday he goes on it once an hour. So do I, because it's just great up-to-date data.
Understood. Brad, I also heard about cyber attacks that you guys were getting.
Yeah, we had a DDoS attack. It was actually something we weren't going to talk about, but we, you know, thwarted it. But that happened the day before early voting, so Monday, October 14th. We had 420,000 basically cyber drones come in, bing, 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 you know, and they're just pinging you. And so what we did is we put in the interface we have that basically says, I am a human, I am not a robot. And people just had to check that, and it immediately went down. We worked with a vendor, and obviously we've been working with CISA and federal people. We're fully prepared. We know they're out there. We've seen other stuff, some stuff that gets out there on social media, you know, and we want everyone to know we will, you know, respond to that very quickly with the facts so that you can trust what we put out. We have to be right every time, and we have to make sure we defend against cyber every time. And these folks are, they never sleep, and they're out there lurking around trying to create mischief. If not Georgia, some other state.
So you will have physical ballots should all hell break loose and maybe one of these Chinese hackers get through?
Yeah, we have paper ballots, physical ballots. That's another good point. We always had security fibers in there in 2020, but you couldn't see them except with a special light. Now we put the state seal in there so everyone can see it visually with their own eyes. Just shine it, you know, put it up to the ceiling. You'll see, okay, there it is. I can see it. But that's official ballot paper. All 5 million ballots are official ballot paper, not from a local supply store. It doesn't have any other state seal on it, just Georgia. And every ballot is cast that way, and every ballot will be received that way. And we can actually do a 100% hand recount of the official paper ballot.
So let me ask you, you probably noticed so many different campaigns and different strategies. How would you characterize the ground game of the Trump team? How would you characterize the ground game that you've witnessed from the Harris team?
All I would say is my son mentioned that he had four people knock on the door. Three were from the Trump campaign. One was from the Harris campaign. So obviously they're out there knocking on doors.
Where does he
that's
live?
Really what it is. Yeah. But pardon me, Metro Atlanta.
Yeah, Metro Atlanta.
Metro Atlanta. So, which is really interesting and fairly in close. So it was just 3-1.
So Brad, if Trump was to call before or after, would you pick up the phone? Would you talk to him or?
Absolutely. You know, I always want to be respectful of people that hold high office and are running for high office. And also want to always make sure we have the facts and try and be as respectful as I can. You know, no matter who calls, I want to give them the facts. This is why you won or this is why you came up a little short. But we want to just be always respectful because I think sometimes the tone we have out there, especially in social media, it's not as respectful as it needs to be. It should be. People running for office from really city council all the way up to the president, you know, those are offices that should be respected. And,
you know, and I think we should just, you know, treat it with the dignity it deserves.
64 million people have already voted in this 2024 election. So you said on Election Day you'll begin to count those early voters, or are you already counting?
No, we're not counting them yet. Actually, all this early voting gets sequestered. So they're going to be doing tabulation during the day, and then that is all sequestered numbers. Mm-hmm. And no one can leave the room to do that. The early votes are real easy because it's just pressing the tabulation button. But all the absentee ballots, you know, that is then, you know, running that through and then doing that, all that work, you know, and being sequestered, doing that on Election Day of all that early stuff. So they'll be ready to go ahead and, you know, present those numbers no later than 8 p.m. That's actually in state law. We put that in this year with SB 189. So three big laws we've had for election, you know, process: House Bill 316 in 2019, SB 202 in 2021, and then this year, SB 189. All three have improved the process to keeping those lines moving quick, improved, you know, making sure that only American citizens are voting, making sure that we have up-to-date voter rolls, the cleanest voter rolls in the country. Heritage has recognized number two in the country for election integrity. So, well ahead of Florida, well right. ahead of Ohio, and all these other states. We follow Tennessee by just a few points.
So could you show me, do you have in front of you how many Republicans have voted, what percentage of Democrats have voted independent?
I have the turnout model right now, and I don't have that one lined up right now, but I'm just looking at 51.3% of all active voters have already voted. Our turnout right now is 3,709,242. But I don't have that from, but it's on the, it is okay. on the page. So you can go to, it's just go, it's called Election Data Hub, sos.ga.gov.
Got it. Thanks so much. So Brad, you, for our listeners who want to know about Georgia, and they all do, you expect to have the results on election night?
We do. Before the night is over, you will have 100% of the results from the early voting, the Election Day voting, and the absentees that all received before the weekend. The only thing that we'll be waiting for is the overseas military ballots, because federal law says they have to be accepted up until Friday. There's about 24,000 people that requested them. We've already gotten back about 11,000, and they're coming in, you know, day by day. And so they're, you know, we'll see if that's enough to tilt it one way or the other. That's the only possible thing we could be waiting on. But on Election Day, we'll know, you'll know how many outstanding ballots, you know, of those we're still waiting to see come in. So there won't be any surprises on what we're waiting for.
Well, that'll be great.
Everything else, everything that happens in person, you're going to know before you leave that night.
All right, Brad. I know it'll be a relief for you and your family, because you put up with a lot over the last 4 years. Brad Raffensperger.
We're survivors.
Understood. And you kept running. You stayed through the job. Brad, thanks so much. You're the Georgia Secretary of State. Optimistic. We're going to get some results on Tuesday night. Appreciate it, Brad.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. So that's one state. That's your answer at one state. Now, I always get, what about Arizona? What about Michigan? What about Wisconsin? I know. Let's see. People are saying, getting a little doubtful about Michigan's tabulation. Certainly, the Republican Party has basically fallen apart. More optimistic about Wisconsin. And Arizona, Maricopa County is already saying it's going to take us a while. Really? You've had 4 years to fix it. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, first of all, when I became a U.S. citizen, of course, I was Democratic, because they give you that option, and because they're the good, kind people who care about America. And then I would watch CNN and MSNBC and read the New York Times, and, oh, wow, the Republicans are terrible. And what... I didn't know that. But then they'd also say Elon is terrible. And I'm thinking, why are they lying about Elon, but they're telling the truth about the rest? And they really had got into my mind that they just didn't know what they were doing. But then when I resigned from the Democrats, I just felt such a relief that I'm not part of the party that's now malicious and dishonest.
So that is Mae Musk, the mom of Elon Musk, and they're really tight. She's over here now, obviously born in South Africa. I got to finish that Walter Isaacson book. I started reading it when I thought I was going to get him, and then, I don't know, something happened with the news cycle. But I want to get back to finishing that book because they did not have a typical upbringing. I believe they were divorced early. But she's very impressive. And she went on to say a few things. Number one, they asked her, too, you know, how do you think your son will do good? Here's what she said. Cut 30.
Well, it's certainly not us. And it's certainly not my friends. Because they can put sentences together. And you know who can't. I've sat in on a full day meeting with him at SpaceX. The engineers come in a different group every hour, and they saying what's happening and what the ideas they have, and they listen to Elon's own ideas, and they are all so excited because they have a CEO who will listen to them or give them permission to make a change. And same with Tesla. I've sat in all day. I just sit quietly in the back because I'm just blown away because a lot of things I don't understand because it's really heavy engineering. And then he purchased Twitter, I sat in on that too. And he certainly got rid of a lot of waste there.
So the question was, what will he do in charge of efficiency with the government should Trump win? And this is her observation. People come in with good ideas. They have permission to use their own ideas. It sends up an open forum. Obviously, innovation just flourishes in his companies.
But the thing is, will he be able to get the federal government to then be as lean and like able to change like he can a private
because
company?
Because a lot of this is union. Like these government workers, some are unionized. Yeah, even though it's crazy, they never should have been unionized. You're a government worker.
And there's so many of them that have been there forever.
Right. They'll figure out a way. And then you want to be in charge? You want to cut programs or you want to make the government more efficient? Can't have it both ways. He thinks he can cut $2 trillion out of the debt. I think he could, too. I mean, these are the areas exciting. If Trump goes in again and if he lets people do their thing even more, he'll have a lot of success.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Danny Penny's trial is getting underway. Remember, he's the Marine on the subway. We saw this lunatic, Jordan Neely, going crazy. Everyone felt threatened. So we put him in a submission hold. The guy ended up dying. I'd love to see what was in his blood. But now he's on trial for his freedom, which is crazy. Being a good Samaritan is costly, but it's a high-profile trial. We'll follow it. This hour we'll be joined by Kimberly Brown, daughter of activist, actor, and Pro Football Hall of Famer Jim Brown. And she's got a message and why she's supporting Donald Trump. You're going to find it real interesting. And also, why her dad supported Donald Trump, too. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This air defense system destruction is really powerful because Iran is sitting there essentially naked. And they know full well that if they conduct another significant attack on Israel, their vulnerability is absolutely staggering.
General Keane knocking out and taking on that Iran's new promise, the promise to attack back at Israel for last week's retaliatory strike. The problem? Their missile defense system has been destroyed. Their guidance radar for their bombers has been taken out. Is this all bluster? Could this be a suicidal attack?
Number two.
I'm not old. I'm seasoned. I have been through enough elections that I can tell you I have never seen a tighter election. Look, I'm not going to lie. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have been in the state a great deal. It is Michigan that delivered his presidency in 2016, and he's hoping for a repeat.
State of the race. We look at the leading experts, pollsters, break down what's likely to happen, plus what the early vote tells us.
Number one.
Donald Trump, you never see him around strong, intelligent women, ever. It's just that simple. They're intimidating to him. He doesn't like to be challenged by them.
Are you nuts? Mark Cuban, you were doing so well for Kamala Harris. Not with that statement. When Sarah gets attacked, this should be the headline during the Kamala camp this week as Biden, Clinton, and now Cuban all go rogue and keep Harris in the explain first mode. Joining us now is Daniel Pletka, distinguished senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and the host with Mark Thiessen of the podcast, What the Hell is Going On? Danielle, welcome. What do you think about Mark Cuban's statements about women? I mean, you could not be more inaccurate, I would think, but does it matter?
Oh, it does matter. Look, it's hugely offensive. And I say that not being someone who is a big aficionado of the, you know, of feminism. But this is part and parcel of the idea that if you are a conservative, if you are a Republican, then your status is somehow diminished. So, you know, my favorite was the announcement of somebody as the first black national security advisor. And it's like, Colin Powell was national security advisor under a Republican. Condi Rice was the first female black national security advisor under a Republican, but they are not black if they're Republican. Ditto. A smart woman is not a smart woman if she's a Republican. That is enormously offensive.
So, yeah, you're true. And by the way, the reason why you never think that, because they don't get hired because of the color of their skin or their gender. They just said the next best person. And that's what I think. I'm like, oh, first one. And they go, you know, by the way, this is the first black Secretary of State. But if you talk to Condoleezza Rice, all she does is reek of confidence and competence. Unlike what we're seeing with Secretary of State Blinken, everything he touches fails. Jake Sullivan, the great insight on the Middle East has never been calmer. And he was meeting with the president out to Ukraine to the last minute and predicted there would be no Russian invasion. That's what we got right now.
You did, that was an excellent rundown. Yes, these are not the look. Jake Sullivan is a smart guy, but he's a PhD, and sometimes you need experience, you know. And this is the problem for the Biden administration. If you're focused on what people look like all the time, if all you care about is identity politics, you are not going to get the best man, woman, anything for the job.
I mean, look at the. Press secretary. Does anybody think that she is worthy of that job? She is every day she lowers the bar. And now with everyone left the administration, she's now his key advisor. How scary is that?
Oh, I feel sorry for both of them. Let's be honest. I mean, would you want to be advising Joe Biden right now? Just what a misery for both him and his aides. But yeah, look, we have seen that she is not competent. I understand giving her the job. What I don't understand is keeping her in the job.
Right. And the problem is you can't fire her because she basically says, I'm the first lesbian. I'm the first female. I guess I'm first black lesbian female. I don't know, because she comes out and says that all the time. So, and they offered her jobs, great jobs in the private sector, but she won't move on. I mean, that's the problem when you check boxes instead of just getting the best person, and you don't hold people accountable when they underachieve. In our business, you're out if you don't. It doesn't matter for the most part. So, Danielle, I got to just bring you to just a little expansive to give you an idea of what Mark Cuban said yesterday. And then I want to go over what President Trump said yesterday with Tucker Carlson. But first, let's go to Mark Cuban. And this is an expanded. This is exactly what he said. You have it?
Go. Donald Trump, you never see him around strong, intelligent women, ever. It's just that simple. They're intimidating to him. He doesn't like to be challenged by them.
So, and he went on, he came back and he says, well, let me clarify that what I meant to say didn't come out good. I know many strong, intelligent women around Trump, including Lane Chow, Kellyanne Conway, Ivanka. Well, that's not what you said. You got Kayleigh McEnany, you got Hope Hicks, the first assistant to the president. You have Governor Huckabee, who was press secretary Huckabee. You have Ambassador Nikki Haley, who used to report directly to the president. I don't even understand the line of attack, Danielle.
Look, this is part and parcel of the problem that you identified that Kamala Harris is having in the last week of the election, which is that a lot of her surrogates, including the former president of the United States, the current president of the United States, billionaires like Mark Cuban, are saying things that she then has to explain away instead of being on message. You just don't want to be talking about how Trump supporters aren't garbage. You don't want to be talking about how Republican women are not stupid. You don't want to be talking about how Israel is, if you are a Democrat, Israel is you know, America's most important ally, and everything they've done against Hamas is great. And yet this is what Bill Clinton, Mark Cuban, and Joe Biden have said in the last week. So, yeah, it's not easy for Mrs. Harris.
And before we get overall to what you think, Danielle, and by the way, Danielle is going to be on One Nation Live on Saturday night, 9 o'clock Eastern time. We just found out that he did put up a live event to Donald Trump at 7:30. So we'll probably go in and out of that. So we'll see how they will navigate that. But you'll be on offering your insight as well. And thanks for that. The other thing is, so President Trump sits down with Tucker Carlson, at which time he's asked about Liz Cheney's attacks. And he thinks she's a war hawk and said basically to the effect of, yeah, would she be as brave if she was out there holding a gun? Here's Liz Cheney.
She's a radical war hawk. Let's put her with a rifle standing there with 9 barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face.
So people are saying that she has threatened violence to shoot Liz Cheney. Your thoughts about this whole exchange and the storyline?
I don't like where Donald Trump has gone on questions about American global leadership. And I think that he could have phrased this more felicitously. I don't like, you know, the kind of attack that conjures up images like this, because mm-hmm. Donald Trump has always rightly said that the Democrats are basically encouraging violence against him. This is the end of our democracy. This is the end of our Constitution. They have been behind the rhetoric that has done that. Now, I'm not saying that he is encouraging violence against Liz Cheney. This imagery is unnecessary. And the really big thing I'll say about this is Liz is self-defeating. This is a person who, look, I supported the Iraq War. Liz supported the Iraq War. Her dad was the vice president at that time. This is a person who's gone back on all the principles that she once held in order to support Kamala Harris. For me, that's a much better line of attack than the war hawk line. Donald Trump attacked Iran and killed Qasem Soleimani when he needed to. He hit Syria after Assad used chemical weapons. Sometimes there's a place for a war hawk. What there isn't a place for is somebody who betrays their values for political reasons.
Right. I mean, I'm with you on the foreign policy, and I think he'll put people around him. It's going to balance that out, as opposed to Tucker and maybe sometimes J.D. Vance. They just don't want any part of anything, which I think is a huge mistake. But what I'm witnessing now in foreign policy is different. But now you have a storyline for the next 3 days. But the thing is, if you're the Trump team, I think you got to clarify. I think you got to clarify quickly. They put stuff up online and you say, of course, I don't want any violence against Liz Cheney. Never in a million years. I don't want any violence, period. I don't want families to lose loved ones because of wars that don't help our national security. That's how I would parry it. But let's just look from Daniel Pletka's perspective. How do you see this race right now?
You know, look, I've always thought that this was Donald Trump's race to lose. He is not the greatest candidate, but he is, to my mind, the candidate that was picked by the Republican Party in a real, actual Democratic process. We actually, Brian, Mark and I had T-shirts made because we had Brett Hume on talking about this, and he said, I hate that line, democracy is on the ballot. Democracy is the ballot. And I thought that was a perfect line. That's the problem for Kamala Harris, is she's not the strongest Democrat out there because she didn't go through a democratic process. She was crowned. So I think it's his to lose, but I agree with everybody who suggests that, you know, it's going to be a nail biter. You're going to be the man on TV. Where do you see it?
I think he's winning, but hasn't won. And that's just
well
it.
Said.
And I just think, yeah. And I just, anyone that goes in and says, let me tell you, he won already or he lost already. But in terms of body language and visits, interestingly, he went to New Mexico yesterday. That might have been his own doing. He does call his own shots. But, you know, I do believe that there's a sense that they might have an opening in Virginia and places like New Mexico and New Hampshire. We'll see. But they also have a lot of encouraging early voting in Nevada. I just had Brad Raffensperger on, and we know there's a huge turnout in Georgia. We're going to get an answer. He believes tallied by between 8 and 10 o'clock on Tuesday night. I think that's all a good sign. I mean, for them, you know, to reassemble the blue wall when they said that That was all a fluke, and the Russians gave him the election in 2016. Remember, they just now, just recently, started admitting that he won in 2016. So he's reconstructing that wall in a time in which we thought that McCain and Mitt Romney would never be able to do it, more traditional candidates. So in one way you say, well, he's not my favorite candidate. And another way you go, is he the only one that could have done this?
Maybe. Absolutely. I mean, you know, look, he has transformed the Republican Party in ways that are pretty important. And the Republican Party looks like a coalition. The Democrats used to be able to claim that they had a big coalition that crossed classes, that crossed education levels, and they can't anymore. And that's a huge accomplishment. If you love the democratic process, then what you truly love is the idea that your leaders are being responsive to the American people, not just to the American people at Harvard and at UCLA, but responsive to the American people who live in what for the East and West Coast is flyover country. So, you know, good for Donald Trump. This is peak democracy. It's just what a lot of people on the left and in the press do not like.
Well, you know, in my radio studio, Danielle, Allison just reminded me, we had the president of Poland about 6 months ago. He, on and off camera, he just loves Trump. And then yesterday we had Boris Johnson, former prime minister of England. On and off mic, just loves Trump. Oh, the leadership, he's funny, he's good to be around. People want to be around him. I don't know the perception. And he's telling me this off mic. The perception that leaders don't like him or that that he's comical and cartoonish, because that's not really the case. We need America's strength back. So Boris Johnson's not looking for a job. So the president of Poland doesn't need any votes. That's really how they feel. So people go, well, on the world stage, he's an embarrassment. I think we should ask the world next time.
Yeah, look, a weak America. You know, look, we have seen two examples of this. We have seen the first Donald Trump term. We've seen the Joe Biden term. And when we look at the results, you know, I don't care. Donald Trump has said a lot of things I disagree with about Vladimir Putin, about Xi Jinping, about everything. If you look at those 4 years, America got NATO countries to kick in more to their budgets. Russia didn't invade anybody, which they did on Obama's watch and they did on Biden's watch. Iran was not attacking anybody. Iran was under sanctions. Israel was not at war with half of its neighbors like it is now. So from my perspective, you can say a lot about what you don't like about Donald Trump's foreign policy. Those 4 years were much better for American national security than the last four.
And I remember watching the Sunday shows and I know your views on all this, too. And the Iraq War, people are revisiting history, a revisionist history on what actually was going on back then and how that Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush was being criticized constantly for leaving the Saddam Hussein problem for Bill Clinton. Why didn't he finish the job? Remember? And that people should, before they come back and criticize the Iraq War, go back in time and rebuild what went into that decision. That's why I look forward to talking to you Saturday, Danielle. Thank you.
Me too.
All right. Listen, when we come back, your calls, 1-866-408-7669. And the latest high-profile name to come out for Donald Trump. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What she's doing now from the start of her campaign, remember, it was all about joy. Now it's so angry. She can't tell us, after spending more than $1 billion in this campaign, being less than a week away from the voters going to the polls, can you tell me three things she is willing to do if she gets elected? All I know is create inflation with homes and provide 25,000 and create new inflation.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have any time to get her agenda. Very interesting. This guy, Jim Manley, who's a Democratic strategist, he says for 40 years, was quoted in the New York Times. And he said yesterday, you know, Joe Biden really made things more difficult for Kamala Harris. Like, it wasn't hard enough when he waited to the last minute to get out of the race and left her in an impossible situation. I'm thinking to myself, wow, already they're spinning a loss. But Kevin McCarthy believes she hasn't even spelled out her agenda, and he predicted this. He says she always comes out strong. She can always read a script. But when it comes to policy, it's going to fall like a deck of cards, like a house of cards. And that's what's happening. You know, I'm going to play when we get back her responses from some of the interviews she does after and before an event. Usually she does it because Joe Biden or Bill Clinton and now Mark Cuban say something that's indefensible that they have to apologize for, and she has to go ahead and distance herself from. So, and she can't do it because for some reason she just gets everything jumbled and is afraid of saying exactly what she thinks. So she puts so many words in front of her topic that by the time we get to the topic, I forgot the question. I think I made sense of that. I'm going to listen to this back, maybe backwards. Coming up next, Kimberly Brown, daughter of activist, actor, Pro Football Hall of Famer Jim Brown. Why she's coming out for Donald Trump.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Kimberly Brown joins us now, daughter of activist, actor, Pro Football Hall of Famer from the Cleveland Browns, from 57 to 65, made more of an impact in civil rights, was really at the nexus of everything in one of the most critical times. He's also a fantastic actor, and I was able to co-host a show on radio with him for years. We made friends. We stayed friends really since 1991. But the first time I had a chance to meet Kimberly Brown, she's got a new series hopefully coming out soon. She's co-host of Daughters of Legends, and from Muhammad Ali's daughter to Ray Charles's daughter, they put together a heck of a team. She's also going to start playing pro football this year in a women's league. Kimberly Brown, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Let's
catch up. You wanted to, like, you reached out, and I appreciate you doing that, and you want to let everyone know that, you know, with your name and the prestige you have, you believe that Trump would be the right choice, just like Jim thought that Trump was the right choice.
Yes, of course. No doubt about it. Trump is the right choice.
For the black community, they're getting berated by President Obama, who says, if you're a black man, come on, think about it. Go look in the mirror, essentially. You should be voting for the black woman.
She's not black, though.
I guess her father's black, right?
No, her father's Jamaican and Irish or something like that, but she's not black. She's only black when she needs to vote.
So having said that, but do you think that Trump is the right, better person for your community, for the country?
Of course he is. He's already shown it within his actions. He put together school choice. School choice allows people not to be restricted to their district. Right now, you will be able to go outside your district to give better opportunities and better education, especially to the black children, because we know that black inner city schools have lower funding and they're paying teachers less. So now those black students can go to other schools. So school choice affects and impacts the black community in education. And then also with the prison reform, the First Step Act, which my dad consulted on, which actually freed black men from the 1994 mass incarceration of Joe Biden's 1994 crime bill, as well as his 1988 crack laws. So, you know, Trump freed the slaves, put in school choice, defunded the number one killer of black lives, which is Planned Parenthood. And he did record-breaking HBCU funding for 10 years mm-hmm. for black people. So I don't understand how people are not seeing the policies that he put in place in the 4 years that he was president.
I mean, we had Charlamagne the God, who I like, come out and say it's so obvious that Donald Trump is racist, and laughed when it was brought up that he wasn't.
Of course he's not racist. My dad was at the White House at least two times that I know of. And President Trump reached out to my father to speak with him and said, what can I do to help the black community? And then when my father went up, when Kanye West went up to the White House with my father to meet with President Trump, you know, my father didn't tell me anything that was going on, but I knew exactly what he was doing because I know who my dad is, who he stands for, and who he helps.
and to partner with Kanye West, who is from Chicago, which Chicago is the number one city of gang violence, and my dad's AmeriCan program combats gang violence. So they went to go meet with President Trump to take to make change in Chicago, and the mayor, Littlefoot, and the governor refused to meet with President Trump. So they weren't even looking at the greater good of their city to combat black-on-black killings.
I know. He said, listen, I'll get National Guard. Let's straighten this out, bring some peace and security, and then we'll work on the other things. And they said, no, stay out of this. People forget that. Here is your dad talking about why he is for Trump.
When he goes through what he went through to become the president, he got my admiration. We're talking about making America a better country. We talked about the poor people. We talked about African-American people. We talked about education, getting rid of violence, dealing with economic development realistically, and how to work together.
So he was definitely all in. Your thoughts about hearing your dad's voice?
Oh, my gosh, that's just amazing. And that's why I'm here today, because I have to back my dad and his legacy and his support for Donald Trump.
Right. He just passed. He just recently passed away. And his support for Donald Trump, I think that if I was understanding correct, he did get some blowback in the black community when he did that, right?
No. And if he did, no, actually he didn't. And if he did, is people that don't know who my father is.
He wouldn't care.
No, he wouldn't care, because he knows he's doing right. He's for the black community, and he's never wavered on that, especially with the Black Economic Union funding over 400 black businesses with the AmeriCan, with gang violence. You know, my dad was the one that called a truce between the Bloods and the Crips in Los Angeles and invited them to his house to speak and see how they can come together and unite and make the black community better than the white community, which was my dad's dream.
I know he always just talked about economic development. He's like, I look at these enclaves. The Koreans come in. They work together. They provide jobs for even they don't know. The only thing they know is that they're from Korea, or they're from Japan, or they're from Vietnam. And he says, I wanted to create that bond in the black community that they start looking out for each other and grow businesses and mentor each other. He did that with the AmeriCan program. I remember going into prisons for his graduation, because it was obvious to know that many don't have fundamentals of education. And when they get out, they're going to go back to crime because it's the only thing they know. But if you can get them fundamentals of life skills as well as education. And he used to go in there. Now, here's this famous athlete who became a famous actor. And then he spent most of his time helping people who had so little. That must have made a real imprint on you as a kid.
Oh, yes, of course. We used to have the AmeriCan graduations at our house. So I would meet some of the boys and the men that were graduating from the program. And because of my dad's moves of unity and bringing people together, that's why I created Daughters of Legends. Because when you understand that when you come together, you have power, you're stronger. So that's what my dad showed me in what he's accomplished over the years that I've been around.
And there's a picture too of your dad with all the athletes and Daughters of Legends. They're going to be part of the project. But the other thing, before we get into that, I like to go over the other thing you're passionate about, and that's keep trans men out of women's sports. For some reason, so many are reluctant to speak up. In fact, people like Megan Rapinoe. And Megan Rapinoe have come out for this and said it's no big deal. Billie Jean King, no problem with this. Here's Riley Gaines, Cut 54.
This radical gender ideology has shaped society as we know it. We have seen this not only affect sports. We have seen how this affects now sororities. We have seen how this has affected prisons, domestic violence shelters. I mean, the language by which we use, the English language. Notice we're referring to ourselves as biological women. What a silly, redundant thing. As if we're not made, all of us, made of biological matter. Why are we even doing that? But again, all of that just to highlight how this has infiltrated into corporate America, the media, academia, virtually every realm you could imagine. This movement has a chokehold on the American people.
And Riley Gaines now gone on OutKick, and she's formed a foundation, decided not to be a dentist, and does this full time. You know, a Division I swimmer was forced to swim against a trans man, and it blew her chance at an NCAA title. Kimberly, you're also motivated to stop this.
Oh, yes, of course. And I totally agree with Riley. You know, this has impacted women. This has affected women. This is not the right move. And I don't understand why Kamala Harris and Biden are pushing this agenda. And this agenda is not a godly agenda. This is the trans movement, and the trans population is less than 1% in America. So why are you pandering to them instead of over women who God created? He said there's only two sexes, male and female. That's it. So if they want to create, if they want to create their own league, we're fine with that. But stay out of ours.
I hear you. So Title IX's been totally revamped. Now it's doing something hurting women by allowing them to play. And I know in San Jose State's got this trans man on there, and UNLV says no, we're not going to play. And all these other major universities are not playing because the net is lower. The man is more powerful. I interviewed a high school volleyball player who's now in college and said she still have headaches from playing, getting a ball off her head in a volleyball game.
Gosh.
So you don't blame them for stepping out, right?
No, I definitely not. And I encourage all women, if there are trans men on your team or you're playing, that you step off that field. You step off that court. You do not play against them. No. We're not gonna bow down. And I don't understand why other people, especially Christians and men, are not standing up for us women in this regard.
We are. Here's a woman in Congress, Virginia Fox, on Title IX, Cut 53.
The whole idea behind Title IX is to treat men and women in opportunity and in scholarships equally. And at the time, it was a bipartisan issue. Again, Democrats seemed to know what a woman was in those days and what a man was.
Right. So it is a major issue. One of the most successful ads for Donald Trump is about this issue. So, Kimberly, tell me about the show, Daughters of Legends.
Well, Daughters of Legends is a superhero women's team coming together to change the world. We're continuing our father's legacies as well as creating our own, because we know that we're stronger together than we are apart. And we're going to make an impact on the world and leave a legacy behind. And that's what Daughters of Legends is. So my partner, Robin Charles, she's the daughter of Ray Charles. And I have other daughters that are guest stars, but, you know, it's just Batman and Robin right now. And then I have another group, Daughters of Sports. And Daughters of Sports, we believe that women sports should remain women and girls sports. So those are our missions. That's what I'm accomplishing. And we've been filming for the last 4 years. I dropped the first episode of Daughters of Legends on my site, dollstv.tv. And my dad guest stars on the first episode.
Nice. That's great. And the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that you are also playing in a women's football league. You're going to start this year?
Yeah, actually, my career in football started in 2019 with the Legends Football League. And then in 2022, I played for the Los Angeles Storm. And we've been in hiatus for the last 2 years, but I'm actually switching to a new league coming up this year. And I'm going to be playing for Los Angeles. And I'm also going to be on the board. And talking to this new league, you know, I told them, I said, if you're going to have any type of trans in the league on the field, then you can count me out. I will not be doing it. And they were like, okay, no, we're going to change that. So, yeah, if more women stood up and said, we're not playing, then they would have to remove these trans men from our sport.
You would think this is the we're going to look back at this and say, what was going on in America at this time? So it's safe to say, Kimberly Brown, when you email me, you don't have your pronouns on there?
Oh, of course not. No, I don't do dumb stuff.
Yeah, but I'm still getting emails with pronouns. It's insanity.
It is crazy, but that's the thing, though. It all started with Obama. Obama opened the door for this.
How?
Right?
How?
He did that by federally legalizing gay marriage. That opened the door for everything. And now Joe Biden is continuing his legacy by pushing this LGBTQ agenda all over the world.
Well, I guess he is, because in Central and South America, before we give aid, we demand certain type of LGBTQ guidelines and DEI demands. But I think we're waking up out of it. DEI is, they announced it's out on Lowe's. Out with Lowe's Home Repair or Home Depot is out. Like, more of these major corporations, soon we're going to get out of government. So hopefully we're sobering up. So, Kimberly, if people want to get your show and watch the show, where do they go?
They go to dollstv.tv. That's dollstv.tv. And you can go to my website, daughtersoflegends.org.
What was it like having Jim Brown as a dad?
Oh, my gosh. So amazing. I'm so happy that God blessed me with the father that I had. I had an amazing childhood. You know, I realize now at my age that I'm so much like my dad, and I love it. And I think that my, you know, I believe that my dad's my hero. So yeah, it was amazing. You know, my dad taught me a lot, especially looking at people's actions. Over their words, or their actions matching their words. And that's very key in this election as well. It's like Trump was in office for 4 years, right? And he put in policies. We had no wars. We were thriving. The economy was good. And then we've had 4 years of famine. And people are still trying to vote for Kamala Harris when she hasn't done anything in the last 4 years. Gotcha. So that's why I love my dad and the lessons, right, and him instilling the knowledge and wisdom that he did, right, because I can see clearly through the BS of what's going on in this world.
Kimberly Brown, thanks so much. Look forward to talking to you again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Brian.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Do you think Donald Trump has an opening with Arab Americans in the Dearborn area? And if so, why?
I'm going to be very candid. He's working that community very hard. Here's one of the things that we all have to remember. No community is monolithic.
Sure.
The Hispanic community, everybody puts over, well, they vote Republican and Democratic. The Arab American Muslim community is also not monolithic. The mayor that endorsed Donald Trump last Saturday, Bill Blasio, a good friend, is a Republican. So not surprised by that. I think he is reaching out and talking to this community, and he will get some votes. But we also know that there are a lot of Arab Americans that remember one of the first official acts he did was try to ban Muslim travel, that he has said that he wants to deport them. And he's got a history of many other horrific statements. So many are just skipping the top of the ticket, and some are voting for Jill Stein, and some will vote for the vice president.
So that is Congresswoman Debbie Dingell on CNN. She's worried about losing Michigan, but she came out, you may remember, in 2015, 2016, and said he's going to win Michigan. Donald Trump is very strong in Michigan, and no one paid attention. Hillary barely went, never went to Wisconsin either. She's saying that he's very strong there, and they've been doing the work there. The other thing is, yeah, you're right, Debbie Dingell. He did come out with a Muslim ban. Not all Muslims, but from nations that have terrorist enclaves, we needed to be fully vetted on them. But he also did the Abraham Accords, where he said, hey, guys, I'm going to treat you equally. I want you to just normalize relations with Israel. And both sides benefited. The only thing that stopped it was the attack from Hamas to Israel. Or Saudi Arabia would be part of that.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here, coming to you, closing out the week here on the Brian Kilmeade Show in Midtown Manhattan. But we're national, heard around the country, around the world. A lot going on this hour. We're going to do a simulcast on The number one network in the world, Fox News Channel, Harris Faulkner, the highly rated Faulkner Focus in about 15 minutes. Dallas Jenkins is going to be joining us, an American film and television director, writer, and producer. His latest movie is The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, also known for the executive producer of The Chosen, extremely popular, especially with our audience here today. And, of course, we're tracking all the breaking stories, and we now have just gotten a response on the other story that we've been discussing from the camp of the Trump team coming out to further define what the president said last night with Tucker Carlson. So for now, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This air defense system destruction is really powerful because Iran is sitting there essentially naked. And they know full well that if they conduct another significant attack on Israel, their vulnerability is absolutely staggering.
In a way, I think there's some people in Israel, and I can understand, that almost want Israel to do what they promise, and that's attack back. They promised to attack back because Israel's attack on them last week, they said, went over the line. Good luck with that.
Number two.
I'm not old. I'm seasoned. I have been through enough elections that I can tell you I have never seen a tighter election. Look, I'm not going to lie. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have been in the state a great deal. It is Michigan that delivered his presidency in 2016, and he's hoping for a repeat.
State of the race in Michigan. We look at the leading experts, pollsters, breakdown of what's likely to happen on Tuesday.
Number one.
Donald Trump, you never see him around strong, intelligent women, ever. It's just that simple. They're intimidating to him. He doesn't like to be challenged by them.
That is wrong, and that Mark Cuban said it when Sarah gets attacked. That should be the headline during the Kamala Harris camp this week as Biden, Clinton, Bill, and Cuban all go rogue and keep Harris in the explain first mode. Now, first, Elena, Mark Cuban is getting accolades because he's done a good job defending Harris in adversarial situations, goes on CNBC, and I guess one of the other news networks. But the problem is that when you have surrogates, you don't coach them because maybe you're in awe of their bank account. They don't get on the same message. So he screwed up the immigration message, saying that Joe Biden let so many people in because he had the problem of having a big heart, which is insanity. 8 million illegals. Where you have today Rachel Morin's killer on trial. So obviously that's not what the campaign thinks. They had to say that. And then we have the expanded version. Let's hear the whole thing, if we can, Justin, of Mark Cuban going out on The View and explaining. I guess the topic was, why doesn't he do things with Nikki Haley?
Donald Trump, you never see him around strong, intelligent women, ever. It's just that simple. They're intimidating to him. He doesn't like to be challenged by them.
It's just absolutely nuts. Remember Sarah Huckabee Sanders? If he didn't think she was good, you think she would have put him in the line of fire every single day? She's a consultant of his and became an advisor of his. Do you think that you might get Hope Hicks being his assistant if she was a weak woman that he doesn't like to hear back or get feedback from? I know for a fact she was often telling him things that he didn't want to hear. Do you think that maybe Carolyn Leavitt, who's another 20-something spokesperson? You don't think she's a strong woman? Kayleigh McEnany, one of the best press secretaries ever. You don't think that was a strong woman? Do you think his wife was not a strong woman doesn't mind sharing the stage with? You're talking about an international model who speaks four languages, is a business person on her own. You know Linda McMahon, wife of Vince McMahon, was head of small business, the SBA. She doesn't take a back step from anybody, whether you're a 350-pound steroid-ridden wrestler, a very driven husband, and certainly not a weak person to Trump. So I don't even know what he was saying. It has no sense of reality. Now, he has since it's unmoored, in other words. He tried to say Nikki Haley doesn't want to appear with because she doesn't take anything from him. I'm just going to give you an idea. I read her book. In her book, she talks about how Donald Trump knew she was having trouble with four-star General Kelly. They didn't seem to respect her in Mattis. So she asked and got permission to go right to Trump with her point of view and reported as a U.N. ambassador right to Trump. It was basically made a cabinet position. And Trump stood by her as she took on these four-star generals. I like General Kelly, but he just did not mix well with that White House on any level. So here's the line. Donald Trump never seen him around strong, intelligent women. It's just that simple. They're intimidating to him. He doesn't like to be challenged by them. And you know, Nikki Haley will call him out on his nonsense and reproductive rights and how he sees and treats and talks about women. I mean, he just can't have her around. It wouldn't work. Couple of things. She was on with Brett Baer the other night and said Madison Square Garden was good, but it was too much bro. That should have been more of a female presence there. But there was. Alina Haba, to mention some, Tulsi Gabbard, and others. So that's some of the pushback. He said he came back and clarified, but his clarification makes no sense. So we'll talk about that. And when we get back with Harris Faulkner, I'm also going to bring up the controversy later on this half hour, the controversy of what's going on with his comments yesterday with Tucker Carlson when he came out and says that Liz Cheney's a warmonger. I wonder if she had the same point of view if she was out there in the line of fire. So she said it slightly differently. People are taking it totally out of context. This campaign just answered back. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Brian Kilmeade here. On the back end of this, I'm going to squeeze in some calls. 1-866-408-7669. You can write me. Go to BrianKilmeade.com, and you can just have a comment section. Just a quick note, too, especially to WOKV listeners, one of our great affiliates in Jacksonville. I'm going to be there February 15th, huge theater. Want to fill it up. We're selling a lot of tickets. Just go to BrianKilmeade.com. February 15th, History, Liberty, and Laughs. It's a full-on fun day. You got news, history, and it's a red, white, and blue night. So BrianKilmeade.com. WOKV, especially WDBO, we have a great affiliate out there too. Panama City, anyone in the surrounding area, you make it a weekend, it's a fantastic area. And even though the Jaguars aren't a great season, if you can catch a game, it's always good to catch a game, although everything will be over by then. So we're waiting on that. So with some of the – there's three things that are happening. Number one, still lingering back is the comedian from MSG and people thinking that Donald Trump might actually be responsible for a comedian's comment. Number two is Joe Biden's comment talking about Donald Trump supporters being trash. They're trying to walk that back from. And now they have Donald Trump on with Liz Cheney, who is talking about Liz Cheney and saying, would she be so aggressive when it comes to war if it was her fighting? And they took it out of context saying that Liz Cheney should be shot. What are you talking about? Watch the event. Understand, Donald Trump will make many things you don't like, but you don't take him out of context and say that he's saying that women should listen to him whether he likes it or not, and that he wants Liz Cheney to be met with violence. That's not at all what he said, and it's dangerous that they bring it up. And lastly, when Mark Cuban comes out, who's a fantastic surrogate for Harris, better than all the other surrogates combined, came out and said basically Donald Trump doesn't want strong women around him just to make Donald Trump's numbers with women worse, it blew up in his face because it's just not accurate. Again, you want to criticize Donald Trump, you want to go over the court cases, you want to call him a felon, you want to do that stuff, go ahead. You know, see how it works. But then when you make stuff up, all you do is get their campaign fired up and you get his people more motivated. You get his people more motivated to act. So we'll see where that goes. She's going to be coming to us shortly, and we're going to have a simulcast. So it's kind of weird. So if you're driving around right now, it's half TV, half radio.
And his Fox radio show as well as his show One Nation on the weekends. Brian, are you with me?
Yep. Saturday, 9 o'clock, One Nation. I know you'll be watching, Harris.
I'm sorry. We had a little bit of a problem, Brian. I didn't hear what you said.
You can
I apologize.
Hear me now?
Brian, I'm going to stick with you for a second. Well, I can't. We're going to go to a reporter now. I apologize to the audience.
All right. You guys can hear me or no? So I don't know what just happened with audio in our own building. How we could make that work is beyond me. So we'll see if they come back to us. You have Lucas Tomlinson updating everybody on the garbage comment, the trash comment that Joe Biden made. It's not going away. You know, you saw Donald Trump walk up, pull up in a garbage truck And now you have people in the diner we went to this morning with Will Cain wearing reflector vests. And when you wear a reflector vest now, not only is it a salute to blue-collar workers, it's also a salute to garbage men. During Will Cain's diner hit this morning on Fox and Friends, one guy stood up and he said, "Why are you wearing a reflector vest?" He says, "Because I'm proud to be trash. That's what Joe Biden called me. I'm proud to be a Trump supporter. If he wants to call me trash, that's it." And then he got up and stood up and said, "We got to start a chant. We are trash." I've never heard anything like that in my life, but it shows you how different, air quotes, this news cycle is. So we are trash. That was the story of this morning. So Donald Trump is making the most of that, and he should. And Kamala Harris has to explain herself, and she should. She said, "I want to bring everyone together." Think about this. She made a major speech on the Ellipse, left Joe Biden locked in the White House. He stole the story from her because of his incompetence and lack of discipline. And as he said, he's a gaffe machine. He also, while doing that, her speech, while ripping Donald Trump, said, "I want Donald Trump supporters. I want to be a president for all the people." Nobody's talking about her major speech that she claimed got tens of thousands of people there. So are we going to try to do this again? No, we're not going to go back.
Yeah, no, we're not going back.
All right. So we'll take some calls now. So here's Donald Trump talking about how he feels in the polls right now compared to the last two sessions, last two times he ran for president, cut one.
"We're leading for the first time, I think, ever, right? We're leading in early voting for the first time ever. Never happened because, as you know, Democrats always lead in the early part. To be leading in early voting is unprecedented, so that's really great. So it's an honor."
Well, so far they're doing that, and they have their surrogates out there running for Harris. Harris is not strong. Here's another example. She was asked, too, about the race, fighting for all people, bringing people together, yet most of her message is about Donald Trump and about him being a terrible, terrible dictator. Hitler reduct. Cut 16.
"We're here because we're fighting for a democracy. Looking at is a difference in this election. Let's move forward and see where we are."
So either her prompter got stuck, or she just totally lost her train of thought that's in the prompter, or she doesn't realize she keeps repeating herself over and over again. That is another example of a scripted word salad where you just double the phrase that's actually written in the prompter. This is the person you have to deal with. You could not understand Joe Biden. You never felt he was comfortable at his feet, always angry. And now if she becomes your president, this is what it's going to be like when she has a prompter or doesn't have a prompter, because she's not sure in any of these topics. So where's the race right now? I want to give you an opinion. This is the common question I get. Where's the race right now? Who do you think is winning? Newt Gingrich weighed in. I know everybody knows Newt wants Trump to win, but here's what he said. Cut 21.
"What you're watching is sort of like Custer's Last Stand. I mean, these folks are all on the verge of a disaster. They're running in circles. They're saying things that are hysterical, untrue, unbelievable. And if you watched Kamala earlier today, she's just plain getting exhausted. She's never campaigned. She's never had to win anything. It's all been given to her. And now suddenly in the last week, I suspect, beginning to realize she's going to lose. And you're going to see more and more desperation from now through next Tuesday as it really sinks in that this is over."
We'll see. I mean, I'm not nearly as confident as that. Kevin McCarthy also has been a lot of races. 2022, he flipped the House, but not by the margin he wanted. Cut 19.
"When she was a senator, she voted to the left of AOC, to the left of Bernie Sanders. She comes from San Francisco. She only speaks the way she does right now because she's on teleprompter. So not only does she have the leftist views, it's how she feels about you, me, and all your viewers. They think we're garbage. They think if you're a woman, you're not intelligent if you support a conservative philosophy. This is how they truly feel about us."
That's the message. I mean, you're getting it over and over again. And I actually picked that up, and you'll probably remember if you listen to the show, when he first did his address at in Philadelphia with the red background, MAGA Republicans, MAGA Republicans, MAGA Republicans. Well, they make it the, he said, they're terrible people and, you know, they got to be stopped essentially. And he says it all the time. Well, stop working and they stop using it until he stumbled into doing it again in that Zoom call. Why? Because most of the Republican Party is made up of MAGA Republicans. He got 74 million votes, more votes than any Republican in history. More than Mitt Romney, Senator McCain, and President Bush. Twice. More than that. So when you go ahead and put him down, you could mean it. And you could think that they deserve it. But maybe you should try a new country. Because you're vilifying half the country. You're going to put him into to political rehab? Having said all that, pulling out the advocates and surrogates, what about the analyst? Frank Luntz on what the numbers look like. Cut 50.
She had one of the most successful launches of any presidential candidate in modern history. She went from 5 points behind to 3 points up in a matter of weeks. And then she turns on Trump. And then her campaign stops being about what she's going to do and starts being about what he's done and will do. And I note that it just froze right there. And in fact, she's probably retrenched a point or two since she hit her peak. The public wants to know more. They want to know what she will do in her first day, in her first week, in her first month. And the campaign is going more and more negative on Trump, using Trump's own words against him. But it's a focus on Trump rather than herself.
All right. That's true. I mean, you have to bring up your opponent. But now it's most of her speeches is about her opponent. And she's almost outraged that you see people going, how could he be close? Jimmy Kimmel, how could he even be close? Howard Stern, I don't mind Donald Trump, but I really don't like his voters. So people are mad at Joe Biden, but he actually thinks that. You know, he thinks that Trump supporters are garbage. I really believe he thinks that because he can't understand it. Because he thinks Donald Trump is not a real president, not real president material. Why is it that certain people can look at him and say, I can work with him, he's different, and we need things to shake it up? And other people see the end of democracy if Donald Trump becomes president again. I mean, it makes me think that if Trump wins with 300-plus electoral votes, which very well could be the case, and it's decisive, and you can't really argue about it except for a few minor court cases, that people are just going to either leave the country or they're going to be so angry, just going to try to undermine him again. All right, we'll put your calls on hold for 15 minutes. Dallas Jenkins next.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, y'all, I can't wait for you to experience the true spirit of Christmas in the charming new movie, The Best Christmas Pageant Ever. My new rendition of Go Tell It on the Mountain appears in the movie, and I hope it helps you get into the Christmas spirit. Take your whole family and see it in theaters early, beginning November 2nd.
All right, that is a message from Dallas Jenkins, an American film and TV director, writer, and producer. His latest movie is The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, best known as the co-writer, executive producer of The Chosen, the first multi-season series about the life of Jesus. And Jenkins' career is focused on Christian media, and this is a star-studded cast. Dallas, welcome. Are we ready to talk about Christmas?
I'm ready to talk about Christmas. I'm excited. Are you?
Not yet. For Christmas, no. I'm not excited.
Not until after the election?
Yeah, or after Thanksgiving. Tell me what went into this.
Well, I have been chasing the rights to this book for 20 years. The book is The Best Christmas Pageant Ever. It's a classic. It's been around for 50 years. And when I read it 20 years ago to my kids, I was laughing. I appreciated the nostalgia. I love Christmas. It's got a great story of how these bad kids from the wrong side of the tracks take over this town's Christmas pageant. And then, of course, because of their poverty, because of their outsider status, they're actually closer to the heart of the Jesus story and the birth of Christ than everyone else is. I get to the last chapter. I am crying so hard. I can't even see the pages. My kids are looking at me funny. My wife takes the book from me. She starts reading it. She starts crying. We're just passing it back and forth. So for well over 15 years, I was chasing the rights, trying to get it. And they had it set up with other studios and other directors. And finally, because of The Chosen, they finally believed I was ready and capable, and so I finally got the rights. And so talking to you now about it, the fact right. that this movie's coming out soon is a big dream come true.
Well, it comes out, what, November 8th?
November 8th, nationwide, yep.
All right, so here's the trailer.
Don't miss out. The annual Christmas pageant tickets are on sale now.
They're advertising it on TV now?
The pageant is an especially big deal this year. It's the 75th anniversary.
I want to give special mention to Grace for volunteering to direct it.
You did what?
Oh, no. Did somebody die?
It's worse than that, son.
It's going to be the best Christmas pageant ever.
Oh, no. It's the Hermans. The Hermans are absolutely the worst kids in the history of the world.
What'd they do now, dear? Break another window?
Set something on fire?
Steal your lunch and then punch you for not having any candy?
No.
Even worse.
We're gonna be in your Bible play.
Herdmans in church.
Oh, boy.
We take the pageant seriously. It's about community
and tradition.
What do you all suggest, that I kick the Herdmans out of the church?
Yes.
So you have a great cast. Judy Greer, Pete Holmes, Lauren Graham. It sounds like they were willing to, more than willing to jump in on this, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. This story, even though, you know, especially with me telling it, it focuses on the birth of Christ and the true meaning of Christmas. But even people who aren't necessarily traditional churchgoers have loved the book, loved the script. I think, you know, when Pete and Judy and Lauren Graham, who my, you know, kids are obsessed with from Gilmore Girls, read the script, they said they were crying as well. So we've seen that in early screenings. We've done many screenings around the country, and just the response has been really incredible. So I think there's something about Christmas, something about the kind of the classic nature of telling that story, particularly when you can focus on the true meaning of it, that that kind of brings everyone together.
So The Chosen, whose idea was that? I mean, there's been so many Jesus movies, but to have a series, this type of acclaim, what made you feel as though The Chosen was the right time to release it? Because clearly you were right.
Well, I don't know that I had all that big of a strategy for it. I remember I did a short film about the birth of Christ from the perspective of the shepherds for my church's Christmas Eve service. And I was coming off of a huge career failure. I didn't know that I would ever make another movie. So I did this little thing for my church. Very long story short, it went viral. I had the idea for a show. There's been movies, like you said, there's been miniseries, but a multi-season show gives you the ability to kind of explore these stories even more, give some backstory, some context, fall in love with some of the characters. And so I had that idea, but I didn't think anyone would do it. But that short film went viral. We ended up doing it crowdfunding to crowdfund the first season, shattered the all-time crowdfunding record, raised over $10 million from 16,000 people. It was all crazy. So I don't think I'm necessarily strategic. I think I've just been following and listening and seeing how this thing has grown.
But did you know you were capable of executing it so well? I mean, the acting, the acclaim it's received. I mean, yeah. For a story that most people know, to be able to do what you did is pretty sensational.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly had no idea it was going to be this huge. I don't think anybody did. I think it's just, like I said, I've been following. I think I'm a pretty good filmmaker. I don't think I'm this good to do a show that has had this kind of response all over the world. But I think that's sometimes when God does something and you get to be a part of it, you just hold on tight and you make sure that you're following and listening and doing your best.
So when you talk to people in traditional Hollywood, where you go to the traditional movie theater, I know everything's changing rapidly, but the Christian film was always niche. You see these huge numbers and these huge successes, but it was off the mainstream. Is that changing when people see the box office? Is the perception changing?
It really is changing. And I can tell you, Brian, I've been in this business for 25 years. I've been a consumer of it for longer. I have never seen a time where more big time studios, the biggest streamers in the world, are actually pursuing this kind of content. I'm in the rooms. I'm having these meetings. In fact, I have another one today about wanting to do more Bible content. The Chosen, we're expanding our efforts. We're going to be doing more Bible stories kind of rooted in this Chosen universe. And the biggest studios in the world are excited and wanting to be involved. I've never experienced that before, but I think that honestly, the fact that, you know, there's so many corporations involved in the studios now, and I say in some ways you can think of that as a negative, but actually it's a positive, because they look at the numbers and they're not stupid, and they go, if we want to actually make money and build our company, ignoring 50% of the country probably isn't a good idea.
So with the best Christmas pageant ever that's rolling out beginning November 8th, is it in all the theaters, or are you doing a slower rollout to build up?
No, this is a mainstream Hollywood release. Lionsgate is doing a great job promoting it, getting it out there. As you saw at the beginning of our segment, Blake Shelton did an original song for it. So this is not something that's just a niche little thing that we're doing. I mean, this is a mainstream release and hopefully a Christmas classic.
Did your kids watch it?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, just the other day, one of my daughters saw it for the first time. And she was crying, and she was so excited about it. And my kids are actually hard to please. They're not impressed by dad. So you'd think, oh, they'll just love everything I do. But they're actually the hardest ones to impress. And they've been thrilled with it. I mean, everyone who's seen it in the screenings, the response has been really great.
All right. Dallas Jenkins, can't thank you enough. Congratulations on all your success. And hope to see you continue on that way.
Yeah, appreciate you, Brent. Thank you.
Yeah, pick out the best Christmas pageant ever. All right, so we'll take a short time out. Come back with more. It looks like the fun has started and the campaign has begun for today. We'll give you an idea where the candidates are going to be. Brian Kilmeade Show.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you Googled Rogan Trump,
they got to Joe. They got to Joe. He's apologizing.
You could only get clips. You couldn't watch the whole episode. You couldn't find it.
Yeah.
And so we reached out to them a couple of times, and they fixed it to their credit. So now you can find it.
Oh, good.
But so in the meantime, Elon was furious. And so Elon contacted Daniel Ek at Spotify, and they put it on X as well. So now it's on X. So now it has way more views. You can't suppress it. It doesn't work. This is the internet. This is 2024. People are going to realize what you're doing.
Yes, but they don't seem to care. It blows me away that happened. They already got millions of views. I got it. Trump sits down for 3 hours with Rogan, and you have trouble finding it on Google-owned YouTube? I mean, this is ridiculous. So now they got to put it on Twitter. They got to put Jim Jordan's doing an investigation on it. And it is just, you would think we'd be beyond that by now because it's so discoverable. And then we had J.D. Vance go on there. He may say some things that people are getting some traction. When he was talking about the trans movement, he believes the gay community will mostly vote for him, but he used the term regular gays. So that made Anderson Cooper go crazy. I'm not sure that any of this stuff moves the needle. But no one's playing a perfect game at the end here. Joe Rogan's been in the middle of it. He says, I'm not shutting the door and having Harris on. I invited her on. Waltz would probably be even better because Waltz gets about an inch thick. Keep in mind, too, I was just thinking about this. Think about all the surrogates and what they're asked to do for Harris. You don't hear that about Trump. Trump makes his appearance. You hear about Vivek and Tulsi and RFK doing certain niche things, JD doing some events. But the camera follows Trump. Look what Harris has. Beyonce, Taylor Swift, I think on Monday, supposed to be a big surprise. Yesterday, J-Lo upset about a comedian from Sunday. Willie Nelson, Bruce Springsteen, and of course, rock star politicians like Barack Obama. Trump's got Trump. And that's it. It's amazing. Can you imagine saying, yeah, well, you'd be perfect and you could headline the event. It's just that we're going to have other people with bigger names and bigger followings carry the event. So they come out just knowing that Beyonce started. And by the way, they had 30,000 people show up or something. Great. But they thought she was going to sing. Disaster. This time they say J-Lo's not going to sing. She's going to speak. They got about 3,000. So I'm not sure. In the end, I think that if I was these guys, I would not be asking at all for surrogates. If Harris loses, the surrogate parade is over. But one of the reasons why Mark Cuban is in, so deep is because he's been on the air constantly. Why has Mark Cuban got to do so much surrogate work, frontline surrogate work in all the networks? Because Governor Waltz is such an epic fail. J.D. Vance, last weekend, 3 Sunday shows. 1 weekend, 7 shows. Then he does his own events and takes questions. Governor Waltz is kept off everything. A friendly interview with GMA, and he is going to give his closing argument on Stephen Colbert's show. Instead of J.D. Vance sitting down there with all his adversaries, which happen to be the network news anchors, you have her running mate, totally marginalized, shaking hands, doing things like playing Xbox or Madden with AOC. It's because, it's essentially because he's been a disaster. and he's not good to carry things. Yeah, he'll shake somebody's hand. He'll pretend to be a hunter, pretend to be a football coach, pretend to be a farmer. He looks bad in all of it. Can't shoot his gun, can't work his gun. Says he's got some farming awards. He didn't get any. Then he's got some link in some weird relationship with a Chinese woman that was near suicidal when he broke up with her while married. Good luck with that. Put out the second gentleman. What could go wrong? I don't know. Have you Googled him lately? A lot can go wrong with the second gentleman, and maybe he has. So she's going to get superstars. And believe me, they're on Zoom. They don't just appear whether there are others. So Frank Luntz just broke down where we're at right now. I'm not saying she can't win. I'm pointing out important moments. Here's Frank Luntz, cut 51.
What is going to happen with affordability? What's going to happen with the border, the two biggest issues, immigration and affordability? She's done an excellent job on focusing on the abortion issue, on the women's health issues, and even on health care. But those aren't the number one and number two issues for all of America. And she still hasn't said what she's going to do, unless I missed it, in the first hour of her presidency, in the first day of her presidency, and in the first week of her presidency. And she's only got 7 days to go. I'm wondering if she's too late.
You know, that's just it. Mark Thiessen did a study, and he used the AEI and all their resources, and he says it's about 26% haven't made up their mind, and they're conservatives. Conservatives, reluctant Trump voters. That's what he should be focused on right now. I'm telling you. No one says, man, Harris, I don't know anybody saying Harris is such a great candidate. I can't wait to vote for it. Same with Biden. Clinton was different. Obama was different. I just don't see it. No one thinks she's competent. No one thinks she's smooth. No one thinks she's got an agenda. No one thinks she's telling the truth about the type of governing she'll do. Because what we have is where she was brought up, how she cut her teeth, and all these horrific. Do you see these scenes of her policy when she was attorney general of arresting parents if their kids miss school? And how that ruined families, mostly minority, and how she laughed about it. I mean, that if I want to find out what she's going to be, shouldn't I look about what she did as opposed to what she said she did without explaining why she changed? Let's find out if there's more to know.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
There we go. Let's go. Bob Costas, at the age of 72, says he's retiring from play-by-play after 44 years. During the 90s, he was calling the World Series regularly with Joe Morgan and Bob Uecker. It did not go well this year for TBS. He got a lot of bad reviews. He seemed to be very mellow and retrospective. Chris Mad Dog Russo, commentator, said that he felt like it was the George Brett Hall of Fame ceremony instead of looking at the Yankees and Royals. He was great for a while. He seems to have lost it when it comes to anything except for politics these days. Next, Patrick and Brittany Mahomes are leading the charge to get a WNBA team into Kansas City. They already have a soccer team. The chief superstar explaining his reasoning behind the pursuit says it's a no-brainer.
We want to get basketball to Kansas City in general, and then WNBA and the success that they've had this last season and these last few seasons, it's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, to try to get a WNBA team in Kansas City to this fan base. I mean, you see it with, if you talk about Kansas, University of Kansas basketball, the Chiefs, or whatever it is, the city of Kansas City is going to come out and they're going to fill the stadium. And so it was cool that we were able to get this soccer team, this women's soccer team here in the current, and they're going into the playoffs now, and you see the support that they have. And so let's try to get a WNBA team in here as well and kind of that same type of ownership group. And
well, I will say, I mean, he also says Taylor Swift is going to go to a women's pro soccer game. They bought the Kansas City Current. Right now, everybody wants to get a WNBA team. It's kind of hot. Next, 59%. 59% say they've had it with ending, had it with ending daylight savings time. Results also find that the sense of dread sets in about 11 days prior, starting October 23rd. Moreover, people won't get over the end of daylight savings time for about 13 days. So the question is, older generations are more eager to get rid of it, while only half of millennials choose to end daylight savings time. Two-thirds of baby boomers say it's time to pick one time and stick with it. Only a third, 35%, believe the trade-off in the fall, an extra hour of sleep for the night versus less light in the evenings is worth it. So I don't know. I guess it's coming this weekend, right? We lose an hour?
Yep, this weekend it's here. I will say, though, if you wake up early for work, I mean, it does stink when it's still dark out at 7 a.m. So I'm looking forward to being light out a little earlier.
Right, but my problem is it's always dark when I get up.
Well, that's for you.
Next, Spirit Airlines will furlough about 330 pilots on January 31st. The company told Reuters this. It's a low-cost carrier. It's been losing money despite strong travel demand. They have furloughed 186 pilots, who would also downgrade 120 captains to first officers. The company has been facing an uncertain future after the collapse of its $3.8 billion merger with JetBlue. Spirit shares have slumped 84% this year. Why didn't they allow that to merge? It's not good for the customer?
I am not totally sure, but I mean, it's crazy because you think, you know, the flights are so expensive and that it is a good option, but all the extras, I think, add up to be close to the other airlines.
Next, Ford 150, Lightning, electric, drives itself, going out of production. The automaker plans to idle it because the plant currently operates on weekdays and, like Ford's other plants, already has scheduled holiday week off starting December 23rd. We continue to adjust production for an optimal mix of sales, growth, and profitability. Problem is, people want gas-powered cars. I'm not saying they're bad. They're not affordable. And without the subsidies, they're going to go up in flames, pun intended. Not intended. Hey, make sure you watch One Nation. Coming up Saturday at 9 o'clock, we'll be live. Trump will have an event. We'll be in and out of that with a great roster of guests.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.